Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan. My pronouns are she, her.
My name is Hillary. My pronouns are she, her.
My name is Joe. My pronouns are they, them.
Awesome. Hi, guys. Welcome back.
Hi.
So apologies to the listeners if the audio is terrible. I hope it's not. But my computer is on its very last legs, so you might be getting a phone recording of this episode. I'm sorry. It's the life of a podcaster. Inevitably, the day you are set to record, something horrible will happen to the recording session. So, you know, we're working on it. We're getting some new equipment. It'll be all good. Let's jump in with things that we've been reading recently and that we're excited to read because I am excited to talk about some of these. So I did just finish While We Were Dating by Jasmine Guillory.
Okay.
I interviewed her for the podcast. By the time this goes up, that interview should go up. I'm going to try to drop it on Bookstore Romance Day, which is in the past now. It's August 21st. That book is adorable. I realized that I mentioned it by title last episode, but I didn't actually give a synopsis. It is so cute. It is about a guy who works for an ad agency and a woman who is a, you know, up-and-coming famous Hollywood actress. She's in her first blockbuster, but, you know, she doesn't know, like, how much she's actually going to be in the movie. She doesn't know, like, if they cut her part. And she's really desperate for this specific sort of Oscar bait role. She, like, really wants this specific role. And so she is the lead in this ad campaign that this guy is taking the lead on. And they, like, right off the bat, they hit it off right away. Awesome chemistry. Very, very cute. They're, like, fun, flirty. They're great. And they become really good friends. And then they start to accept that, okay, maybe we are a little bit more than friends. Like, I like you, you like me. Okay. And her agent is like, ooh, great. If you are in the tabloids, seen with this, like, very attractive, very, like, nice, he has no controversies guy, your name will become more familiar and you're more likely to get this role that you're vying for. You're more likely to have a bigger part in this blockbuster. Things like that. It's very Hollywood. It's very, like, behind-the-scenes Hollywood.
Very Tom Hiddleston and Taylor Swift.
Very, very Hiddleston-y, yes. And
boy, I'm out of my depth.
That was a hot minute, and they were both promoting things, and it was great. But so what I love about this book, though, is that even though it does follow the fake dating trope, they're both in on it because there's no giant miscommunications in this. So, like, they have fairly early on in the book, she has this moment of panic. Her dad is suddenly in the hospital, and she's freaking out. And he's like, "I'll drive you down there." Like, she can't get a last minute flight to I forget where the hospital is, but she can't get there. And he's like, "I'll just drive you down." It's like, what, 5 hours? And she's like, "Are you serious?" And he's like, "Yeah, whatever." And they have this, like, really sweet bonding moment in the car where he's, like, really good at, like, calming her down. And they, like, are very honest and open with each other. They have these awesome conversations. And so when it comes to the point where her agent is like, cool, let's do a fake dating thing, and after this premiere of this blockbuster, you can just, like, drop him and go back to your normal life. And at first she's like, yeah, cool, okay. And then she's, like, about to go through with it. And she stops and she's like, what am I doing? Like, he was so kind to me and so honest. And what, I'm going to repay him by lying to him about this? Like, no, I'm not going to do that. So she's like, hey, this is what my agent wants us to do. Like, and I almost went through with it and I feel like an idiot. So, like, we're not going to do that. And he's like, no, let's do it. I'm in. And so they're, like, in on it together. There's awesome communication. There, of course, is some conflict, but it's, like, simple conflict that they actually talk about and resolve, and it's great. It's, you know, it's of course got the happily ever after that you want from a good romance novel. It's a level 5 on the Steam scale. 5 out of 5. I loved it. So that is While We Were Dating by Jasmine Guillory. I also just finished listening to Sex and Vanity by Kevin Kwan. If you like the other Kevin Kwan books, the
Crazy Rich Asians
series, you will like this. It's same vein. It's Crazy Rich Asians. It's this huge wedding is happening. Oh. And it, like, follows a bunch of the wedding guests. And, like, something happens at the wedding. And you don't know what happened at the wedding between the... And not between the couple, obviously, but between these, like, side characters. And then it's, like, a few years later, you catch back up with them. And you start to find out what happened at the wedding. And it's very silly and fun and very light, super quick read. A lot of fun. I really liked it. I just started listening to The Book of Accidents by Chuck Wendig.
Ooh.
Oh, it's too early into it for me to give a coherent synopsis, but it is scary. It is very creepy, and I am enjoying it a lot. He, of course, wrote Wanderers, which I loved, and the audiobook is read by a couple of people, one of whom is Exie Sands, who is my favorite audiobook narrator. I love her. I love her. She also was one of the narrators for Wanderers. She was one of the narrators for Plain Bad Heroines. I love her so much. I love her voice. So that, so far, again, I'm like maybe a couple chapters in, but it's already scary. There's something with this serial killer who was sentenced to death, but, like, didn't die. He just disappeared when the electric chair goes off, and I think he's, like, bouncing through, like, a multiverse. I think it's very cool and very scary, and I'm enjoying it.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's really good.
Serial killers in the multiverse,
right? Yeah, very scary. Yeah, he's like popping up random places, and he's like, where am I? Like, what's going on? Oh, it's
and
oh.
Who can I kill now?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, he shows up at one point and he sees one of the main characters, and he's like, he says something like, you stopped me or something. So something happened maybe when she was a kid or something, and she, because there was like one victim of his that he got caught. Like, he did, before he could kill her, he got caught. Mm-hmm. And so I think something happened in time with it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to find out. I don't know. I'm also on the spooky kick. I'm reading the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires by Grady Hendrix. It's the last of his that I haven't read yet. because, of course, if you listened to my Grady Hendrix interview, I have a Grady Hendrix shrine in my house by accident. But what's fun about this one, and this will be, again, sort of in the past, but maybe we'll do something again similar in the future, our friends over at the Jack of All Graves podcast, one of the hosts, Corrigan, she picked up this book, Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, on vacation, like, totally just, you know, was like, oh, that sounds good, grabbed it, then realized that I had interviewed the author, and was like, oh, let's do a book club.
Yes. You're just listing books I need to read.
Absolutely. Oh. Yes. It is,
love a book.
It is in the same, town. It's in the same universe, but it's in the same town a few years later after, My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Okay.
So My Best Friend's Exorcism is about the teenagers and, like, their infuriating parents who are not listening to them about the scary, scary thing. And this is from, not the same events, obviously, but this is a book from the adults' perspectives about, like, what you have to sacrifice and deal with to keep your kids safe and keep them sort of oblivious from the horrors of real life.
Nice. Do you need to have read My Best Friend? Okay.
Nope. They're sort of, he calls them spiritual sequels. Like, they're in the same realm, but you do not have to have read them both. But yeah, so I'm really excited. We're doing a little book club with Jack of All Graves, and we're gonna do a little, like, virtual Zoom session. Again, this will already have happened by the time this episode goes up. But as we're recording this, it's this Saturday, so I'm excited for that. And then last, this, I am so, so excited. Okay, hold on. So back in 2018, I listened to this podcast. It was recommended by the McElroys on my brother and me, who I love. So I was like, I'm going to listen to this. They're excited for it. It's called Bubble. It's a scripted podcast. So it's a story. It's like a radio drama. And I will give a synopsis in a second, but I love, 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 love this podcast. And it only had one season and it was incredible. And like 2 weeks ago, I was looking at sort of books that are coming out in the next couple weeks. And I saw this graphic novel called Bubble and it made me think of the podcast. And I was like, oh, I love that podcast. And then I read the description of the graphic novel and it is an adaptation of the podcast. And I am so happy.
I remember I was standing next to you when you like realized this and you were so excited.
I think I screamed and threw the paper. So here's the synopsis that I'm going to pull directly from the marketing materials. Built and maintained by corporate benevolence, the city of Fairhaven is a literal bubble of safety and order, an amazing coffee, in the midst of the Brush, a harsh alien wilderness ruled by monstrous imps and rogue bands of humans. Humans like Morgan, who's brush-born and bubble-raised and fully capable of fending off an imp attack during her morning jog. She's got a great routine going. She has a chill day job. She recreationally kills the occasional imp. Then she takes that imp home for her roommate and BFF Annie to transform into drugs as a side hustle. But cracks appear in her tidy life when one of those imps nearly murders a delivery guy in her apartment, accidentally transforming him into a brush-powered mutant in the process. Oops. And when Morgan's company launches Hunter, a gig economy app for imp extermination, She finds herself press-ganged into kicking her stabby side job up to the next level as she battles a parade of monsters and monstrously brush-turned citizens from a living hipster beard to a book club hive mind. I cannot tell you, like, the podcast is so good. It's so funny. It's so well done. Like, the book club hive mind, they just, like, once they, like, form into a hive mind, they just walk around going, "We are book club. Join us." And the art in the graphic novel is utterly gorgeous. And, I'm so, so happy that it was adapted because I was so disappointed when I was like thinking back on the podcast and realized, oh, they only got one season. Like, I really wish they would have a second one, but probably with COVID, they haven't been able to do anything. And then the book came out and I was like, oh, that's what they've been doing. it is very funny and very sci-fi and monster hunter and a lot of fun. So that's what I've been up to. What about you guys?
You want to go, Joe?
I can. So I was pulling together kind of a list of things I've been reading and realized they're all Booker long list books. So yes. I feel like I need to take a second to talk about the Booker, which is a prize, a British prize that's for a novel written in English in the past year. And it has to have been published in the UK or Ireland. And they just put out their long list, which is 13 books. Then in September, they'll do a short list of 6 books and then choose a winner in October. So I have, for the past couple years, been trying to read the full short list before the prize is awarded. So I start with things I'm interested in off the long list. And that's what I'm reading right now. So the one that I just finished, Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead, I did not expect this book at all. Like, it looked kind of interesting. It's a 25-hour audiobook. It's a 600-page book.
Oh my God.
I just came back from vacation, so on my way out to Oregon, I was like, I'll put this audiobook on. I don't know if I can commit to 25 hours of an audiobook. Like, that's a lot. This is, you know, we'll see. And I got maybe 25% of the way through and was like, oh my God, I think I need to read the physical book because I need this to slow down. Like, wow. I can't get through this fast. But I was out of town. I really couldn't go to a bookstore and buy a 600-page book. I had no space.
Yeah.
So, like, I couldn't help myself. I finished the audiobook. Like, in 5 days, I listened to an entire 25-hour audiobook. It is so, so good. Oh, my God. Loved it. So, it's about a female pilot in kind of 30s, 40s, 50s era. So she is very Amelia Earhart-esque. She disappears in the 50s when she is trying to do a trip around the globe the opposite direction of what Amelia Earhart did. So she's going longitudinally.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Over the poles. And so it tells her life story, getting married at a very young age to a man who let her, basically funded her flying, and then the dissolution of that marriage because it was very contractual, her time in the UK and in Europe in general during World War II. Fantastic, just gorgeous characters, everybody in it. I just love all of them so much. You start out with, like, hearing a little bit about her navigator on her final flight. And then by the end, you're just like, oh my God, I love Eddie. And aww. I wish he was happy. And like, this is, yeah, it's just, it's great. And then interspersed with this, with Marion's life story is a contemporary woman in Hollywood, Hadley. She's an actress, just had a very controversial spin in the tabloids, got fired from a very popular film franchise, like, is kind of in need of a way forward through all of this. And her neighbor, who's an old English gentleman, comes over and is like, you should do this movie about this female aviator. So it's her, she is doing a biopic, very Oscar baity biopic, about Marion life, and kind of starts to uncover some things about her life, because it's, the movie is based on a novel that takes some liberties, you know, as to who she had, you know, who the love of her life was, and all of that. And she starts to uncover it, and it's just a really interesting look into, like, history and truth, and, like, our ability to understand other people, like, and the way that we build our own narratives through other people's lives. And it's just...
I gave this to my sister for her birthday in May. I haven't read it yet. My sister's a very persnickety reader. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, what is this? Have you read it yet? And I said, no, but I've heard it's good. And she was like, I'll let you know. And she came back and said, this is one of the best books I've ever read. And then I've had a couple of customers here who've come in and said, have you read this yet? You have to read it. It is amazing.
Wow. It is so good. Like, I'm trying to hold myself back from rereading it again immediately. Wow. Like, it is so good. And I can't even explain all of the reasons why. It just, like, really... you know, dug in, and, like, I love it.
Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. Great Circle, Shipstead.
Maggie Shipstead. Love that. I'm currently reading Light Perpetual by Frances Spufford, which is about a Woolworths in South London being bombed in the 1940s, and there are five, six.
There's, in real life, what this is based on, there were way more people were killed.
I'm going to get there because I actually have a fun little
thing.
So the perspective of five children who died in the explosion, and it's looking at what their lives could have been. So it jumps forward in time. I think the first jump is like 10 years, 20, to see, you know, what could have been.
What was lost.
Wow. And yeah, and so this is in a certain neighborhood of South London, but I was reading about the author, there's an interview on NPR, I was reading about it, and he decided to write this book because it's based off of an actual bombing of a Woolworths on New Cross Road in South London, mm-hmm. which I was where I lived in when I lived in London. And it turns out he walks by the little plaque for it every day because he teaches in my MA program.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so it was just a funny coincidence because I have walked by this blue plaque almost every day I lived in London. Like, wow. So that was just a cool kind of connection. And I always have a deep love for South London because I spent a very important part of my life there.
Yeah.
So it's really lyrical, gorgeous. I'm really enjoying it so far, and I look forward to seeing how it concludes.
Can I just shout out his earlier book, mm-hmm. Golden Hill, which was terrific. It's a story of sort of a mystery man who shows up in revolutionary New York City. It's very picaresque, you know. He has all these adventures, and it has to do with the slave trade. It's the language is amazing. It reads just like you were in that period. It was a lot of fun, but also quite moving as well. So Golden Hill was terrific.
Okay,
and that's going to be available in paperback now.
Oh, nice. And then the last one I wanted to mention, I'm listening to it, is Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. And I think many people have heard of this. It's like one of the books of the year. The author has previously won a Booker and just recently won the Nobel. Wow. So
no big deal.
So no big deal, you know, just casual author. And it is about an artificial friend or an AF. Which is a kind of robot artificial intelligence that's there to be a companion for children. And her name's Clara. Starts out when she's in her store hoping to find a home. And then she gets purchased by a family and to be a companion to this little girl. It has that interesting perspective that books about AI do of, like, how humans work and all of that. And so her observations are really interesting. And she's just starting to notice there's just something weird about this family. And, like, as the reader, I don't understand what's going on, but it's something. Like, something's happening. Something within, like, society is weird, as well as specifically this kid and her family. And, yeah, I'm about halfway through it, and I have no idea where it's going. And
that's I had no idea that's what that was about.
Yeah, no, I didn't really either. Like, it was on my radar because it's just been talked about. It has this, it's...
Oh, that's right up my alley. I love AI books.
Yeah. So
we should do a display. That one's really good. Lot of great AI books.
So many good ones.
Let's do one.
We should do it.
So that sounds good. That's what I'm currently reading. And I will probably talk about more Booker books as the prize gets
excited. Hillary, what are you...
Well, I'm going to take us straight to popular fiction from the literary. I just finished Stephen King's new book, Billy Summers.
Woo! How about that?
It's good. It is not horror.
Yeah.
It is thriller.
Okay.
Basically, it is one of those last job books. Yeah. Like, I'm going to do one last job and then I'm getting out of the business. And it's about a killer for hire who only kills bad people. That's the only kind of jobs he will take. He's kind of damaged Iraq war veteran. And he, in the midst of trying to finish off his last job successfully, happens upon a crime that he has to save somebody from.
Oh, wow.
And then he cannot just walk away in the way that he thought he was going to.
Oops.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. It was a very lovely found family book.
Mm.
And there are a bunch of Easter eggs in it that are little shout-outs to other Stephen King books.
I love when he does that.
The Overlook Hotel makes an appearance, and there's a reference to The Stand.
Nice.
And I'm sure there's a bunch more that I'm not aware of. Yeah. So it's a fast read. Be warned before you go into it that it's not horror, but I found it very readable and very enjoyable. And the other one I just picked up is Putting It Together, How Stephen Sondheim and I Created Sunday in the Park with George by James Lapine.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I picked this up is Jo is cracking up.
You
think I'm Zelig or something.
No, it's just anyone who hasn't cracked the surface of Hillary, like, she just will pull out these stories. She's like, oh, yes, when I was working on falsettos. I'm like, what? You were doing what?
Hillary has so many stories from living in New York City where she was a professional chef.
But before that, I was a professional gopher.
Yep.
In the theater.
We should do a podcast episode where you just talk about all your crazy stories. There was some day I was like shelving a memoir or something. I don't even remember who it was. You'll probably remember. I was like shelving and you were like, oh, she did not like me. And I was like, Hillary, what?
That was Susan Sontag.
Yeah. Oh my God. Hillary.
Susan Sontag, who thought I was the little stupidest ninny, pain in the ass in the world.
Who are you? What? This is the best life ever. I just, yeah.
I'm like, I once met this person who was an understudy for this role on Broadway. Is that interesting? And Hillary's just like, oh, Susan Sontag, you know.
This is because when you're the coffee girl, you're sitting in the corner all the time in the theater with people that are famous. And you can kind of sit back and they ignore you because you're just the coffee girl. I was a dramatic literature major in college, right? So that's a great way to make a lot of money and jump into the world. Mm. And I graduated in 1980 when the world was crashing and burning, and moved to New York City and worked in off-Broadway theater. I had done an internship at Playwrights Horizons my senior year in college. And so I went to work at Playwrights Horizons as basically a gopher when I got out of school. So I was not good at anything. I was not an actress. I was not a designer. I was not a writer. Mm-hmm. I was good at fetching the coffee and sitting around eavesdropping on things. So the first big show I worked on, it was a tiny show. It was a workshop production at Playwrights Horizons of William Finn's March of the Falsettos, which was directed by James Lapine, who then went on to write Sunday in the Park with George with Stephen Sondheim. And it was workshopped at Playwrights right at the same time I was there. I did not work on that show, but I was around and about. It's where I met my husband.
Mm-hmm.
So this book is about the process of creating this show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delightful for me to read because I know a lot of the people that are featured in the book. Like, I was Andre Bishop's assistant, who was the artistic director of Playwrights Horizons. I was a bad assistant. He would ask me to call his hairdresser to make an appointment, and I'd be like, call yourself, Andre. Like,
oh, my God.
I was so bad. It was awful. But it is hilarious. I mean, people were, it was such a different world. I mean, AIDS was just starting. It hadn't really hit super hard at that point. It was just beginning to. And people were wild and free and crazy and took chances. And this musical was a big chance. And there are these crazy stories in there, like Jim Lapine and Stephen Sondheim up in Andre's office, looking out on 42nd Street, watching the rich lady donors coming in the door smoking joints while they're doing it.
Amazing.
It's a lot of fun. It might be that I love this because I was on the outskirts of it, peeping in. But anybody who loves musical theater would probably really get a kick out of this
book.
So that's me.
I love it. I love it so much. Yeah, we should do like a whole bonus episode where you just sit and tell stories.
I'm never going to recover from that Susan Sontag story ever, Hillary. Honestly, I don't.
It was the funniest, most casual, like, just walking by, like, oh, she didn't like me. I was like, I'm sorry, what?
I'm going to tell you one Susan Sontag story, and you can edit it out. But when I first met my husband, he was, you know, I just started dating him. He was production manager for dance companies, and he was production manager for Lucinda Childs. And he said to me, oh, I went out to dinner with Lucinda and her girlfriend last night. And it was the food was good. It was fine. It was interesting. But her girlfriend can't shut up. Nobody could get a word in edgewise. And I was like, oh, well, who's her girlfriend? He's like, you know, she's supposed to be super smart. I know she's been published in things like The New Yorker. Her name is Susan. She's got this hair. She's got this white stripe and black hair. I was like, Susan Sontag? And he was like, yeah, that's her. She can't shut up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So that was my introduction. And I, at the risk of people saying, how dare you, I am going to say Susan Sontag could not shut up. If you were sitting at the dinner table with her, no one was getting a word.
No one's gonna talk over her.
Yeah, frankly, no. I could spend the rest of my life sitting at a dinner listening to Susan Sontag talk. I cannot even begin to imagine.
I don't know, Joe. So funny. It wasn't always the most brilliant conversation.
Okay. All right. On that note,
Ooh, yep.
We're all gonna
now
like
this disc.
Calm down and
get
back
for the
into
to text us. And
say, I know. Oh. No, it's amazing. No, I'm sure our listeners will be like, yeah, no, that sounds about right. Okay, let's get into our main topic. So we all kind of thought this would be a fun topic. I want to talk about books that we don't usually talk about necessarily, but books that are either unique in physical form or in, you know, topic or genre that, you know, they're not necessarily just a novel that someone would find on a bestseller list. Books that maybe don't translate to audio, books where it's like, it really pays off if you have the book in your hands. I just think that would be fun because there are so many ways to interpret this prompt and there are so many cool physical books out there. So I think Joe's going to kick us off a little bit and yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about just like cool, unique physical books.
Yeah, so welcome back to the Booker Prize podcast that I'm hosting in the middle of the layout.
It's a podcast within a podcast.
So I have two that I just love, and both, one won the Booker and one was a shortlist book. The first one I want to talk about is How to Be Both by Allie Smith. My notes just say, possibly my favorite book.
Oh.
I love this book. It just hit really hard when I first read it. It is told in two parts, kind of two perspectives. For one is called Camera, one is called Eye. They have a different narrator. Each of them has a different narrator. And depending on which edition you get, one of their stories will be first and one of their stories will be second, and it's half and half. So,
and it switches.
So no matter, so when you pick it up off the shelf, you don't know if you're going to get George, whose section is called Camera, if you're going to get her story first or if you're going to get Francesco's story.
Cool.
And I love that as a concept. I just love weird formatting, things like that. And it's really beautifully written. I love the way Allie Smith incorporates art and music into her books just across the board. Like, if you haven't read Allie Smith, I just absolutely adore her. And so, the two perspectives, George is living in 2014, contemporary time for the book. her mother just died. Her mom had this really big fascination with this Italian artist, Francesco Del Cosa, and really just gets deep into looking into her mom's past and, like, kind of conspiracies. Her mom was involved in a lot of, like, leftist movements, and she's just a really great narrator. And then the other perspective is of this Italian artist that her mother was fascinated with, and real artist that we don't really know much about. And Allie Smith has put it forth that they were actually a girl who had dressed up as a man in order to become an artist. And the way her story interweaves with George's is just really fascinating. And it's very, she's displaced in time, and it's just,
that's really cool.
It's just a really cool, really good book. And like, I think you could theoretically listen to the audiobook.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do the thing with the, like, switching. I wonder
if there's two versions of the audiobook.
The ebook, too. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Yeah,
but,
so see, that's one of those things where it's like, it really pays to have a physical copy. Because that's so interesting, because I'm sure, yeah, that must change so much the way you interpret a book.
I mean, I have no idea how. Like, the I read it with camera first, and then I cannot even begin to imagine what it's like reading it the other way, like, and not knowing what's going to happen.
And, not, like, and having that be the
and
first.
And having that be the first, because that's very much more a disjointed kind of narrative. It's, so cool. I adore this book. It's, I would highly recommend it to anybody, and just Allie Smith in general. Incredible. I also wanted to talk about Lincoln and the Bardo, which did win the Booker Prize. And it is set up, it's almost as if written like a script. So each character has their own, so there will be a paragraph, and then it'll say who said it. And, like, it's just dialogue. It's not any extra.
Yeah, yeah. There's no, like, it's not prose.
It's just dialogue. That's what it's set up as dialogue. And
that's such a, because that's one of those books that, like, I remember when it won the Booker, and I remember it was, like, a bestseller forever, and everyone was reading it, but no one seemed to be talking about it, because I had no idea.
So I had recommended it.
Never opened it.
To a lot of people, and they're just like, oh, that, I'm glad I read it. I have no idea. What did I just read? I'm not sure. And actually, shout out to Gibson's Book Club. I first read it for the book club.
Oh, cool.
And so it tells the story of Willie Lincoln, Lincoln's son who died while he was in office.
Oh, okay.
And it takes place in Oak Hill Cemetery in D.C., a real cemetery where Willie's body was laid to rest briefly while Lincoln was in office. And it's all the perspectives are ghosts in this kind of purgatory, trapped in the cemetery. And interspersed within this is quotes from historical documents. Some of them are actual historical documents. Some of them aren't.
It is a work of fiction.
It's a work of fiction. It's really weird in the best way.
It's unbelievable. It's so sad.
Oh my God. That's, I have this quote from George Saunders that I just adore. He was talking about one of the things that inspired this book was when he learned that Lincoln, after the funeral, went to the cemetery and got Willie's body out and held it. And he described it as part Lincoln Memorial, part Pietà, which is a
Madonna
holding Christ in image that's in a lot of medieval art.
It's beautiful.
It's
though.
So gorgeous. It's so gorgeous. It's so weird. Like, it's just so utterly unique and And there was a lot of controversy because it was the first, no, maybe, it was one of the first American books to win the Booker. The Booker changed its rules to include American writers, and there was a lot of controversy over that. Yeah. And I'm like, this is proof, like, this book is incredible. It deserves everything.
Well,
like,
deserved.
Oh.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, it was so funny when you mentioned that you were going to talk about this one, and I was like, oh, is that a unique, does that have a unique format? And I opened it, and I was like, oh, it's kind of like a play, a little
kind
bit.
Of,
it's almost like they're just quotes, like the way it's, I don't know, it's really interesting.
Hard to describe, and I should talk for a minute about the audiobook, because it does have a really interesting audiobook, and I think, that I really enjoyed, it has a different narrator for each of the characters, so there are 160 different narrators. Holy guacamole!
Yeah,
and it's kind of led the two main adult characters who are kind of guiding Willy through this purgatory are voiced by Nick Offerman and David Sedaris.
Oh my god!
So, yeah, it's, and they're just, there are so many random little, like, celebrities like interspersed throughout,
and the ghosts are arguing with one another.
Oh, you know,
they're bickering. They're stuck there, and they don't want Willy to get stuck there. And the reason Willy's going to get stuck there is Lincoln can't let him go.
Yeah,
and so Willy doesn't understand that he's dead.
Oh, my heart.
Yeah, yeah. It is so sad. It's so beautiful, and and so the audiobook
and it's very
is
funny in places.
It's, yeah. Oh, it's, man. It's really a masterpiece.
I need to read this book.
And so I would totally recommend the audiobook, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it as a place to start because it has so many different voices.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand that it's all written as dialogue, you're kind of like,
now who's talking?
What?
What
Wait.
Is going on?
And like, while you may recognize Nick Offerman or David Sedaris,
yeah,
there's this one random person who has two lines, and you're like, wait, who, what?
Who
what
was that?
So, I definitely think it's a good addition to the book, as opposed to maybe, I wouldn't start off with the audiobook,
because
it's a very confusing.
Really confusing.
Straight. It has one of the most remarkable endings ever.
I'm
crying. I am crying thinking of it. And it's not just because it's sad. It is just beautiful.
It's just gorgeous. So the first time I ever went to DC, I went to this cemetery because I was just like in awe of this book. I just wanted to, and it's a wild cemetery. It's really interesting. Yeah. Like very huge, sprawling space. But yeah, I was just like completely enamored of this book. And really, it was the book that started my Booker thing. So,
that's so
love,
cool.
love that book. I also wanted to talk about To Be or Not to Be by Ryan North, which is a choose your own adventure Hamlet.
Amazing.
So you get to choose who you want to play as. You can be Hamlet or Ophelia or Hamlet Senior. And you go through, and like some of the paths stick pretty close to the play. Like, you could definitely choose Hamlet and make the choices that you know Hamlet makes.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other ones where you can like be Ophelia and figure out what Claudius is up to and defeat him, and random, you know, and very much a tribute to the choose your own adventure books, like the classic ones, where there are some endings where you're like, oh, wait, hold on. What's happening? There's a
How did we get here?
Yeah, where did the Yeti come from? Oh, okay. But it's so fun. I know he also has Romeo and or Juliet.
Yes, oh, that's
which
right.
is Romeo
yes.
and Juliet. I have not read that one, but this one's, it's super fun. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was Plain Bad Heroines by Emily Danforth, which I think
we've discussed on the
podcast before.
I think
and
it's
we've
a
all
rule
loved,
we have to talk about in every single podcast.
It has taken over the Aaron Morgenstern books, and it is now the, you know, every podcast we
every
have to bring
podcast.
Up.
And I especially wanted to talk about it because we kind of all came at it from different perspectives.
Yes.
Ryan and I, when it had come out, we just had started the audiobook.
Yes.
And Hillary, we were talking with Hillary, and she was like, but have you looked at the actual physical book? And we're, yeah, like, we're no, like, no, what?
Why?
And it has these gorgeous, creepy, kind of drippy illustrations, yes, throughout. Like, some of them are, you know, their own page illustration, but, yes, then some are just, like, throughout yellow jackets the on, yeah, the edges, and it's so, yeah, pretty. And so it's then Ryan and I chose two different paths. Ryan kept listening to the audiobook, and I decided to switch to the physical book.
That's right, yeah.
And I really loved the illustrations and thought they added a lot to them, but, mm-hmm, I think it also, like you said, Exie Sands is, yes, such a good narrator. Yes. I want to go back and listen to the audiobook.
Yeah.
Because while the illustrations are great, you don't have to have them to be, right, to experience the book like nothing. It's not a graphic novel where,
yes,
any of the plot happens.
Yeah.
But so I think it's just an interesting one for that I think we don't see a whole lot of, especially adult books, yeah, that just have illustrations as part of their text. And, right, I think it was done really well and really helped with the whole atmosphere of the book. It's, yeah, very gothic.
That's the
and
thing,
it's
is
very...
it adds that vibe. It's just another, yeah, layer of that, like, eerie gothic vibe to it.
Yeah, you just, and like that yellow jackets play a huge role in the plot, and so, yeah, they just like appear suddenly in the text.
Yes.
Like just a little drawing of a yellow jacket.
So
and
good.
Yeah, so I kind of was curious what your experience was having not,
yeah,
read the physical book, and I don't know how Hillary read it.
I did both.
Okay.
Did you also, yeah, did both? I bounced back and forth.
So I only did the audiobook, which I think was phenomenal. And again, I love, yeah, Exie Sands, and I think it can be absolutely done just audio, and that's fine. But when I later flipped through the book, I think I was like hand selling it for someone, and I just happened to flip through it, and I was like, oh, that's very pretty. And it just, it's one of those things where I was like, oh, that's like, it's like when you get a really fancy edition of something, like a, like a fancy, yeah, illustrated edition of something cool, or I don't know. It's like, it doesn't, you don't lose anything by not having them. But it's just a little bit of extra. It's just like,
It's just there.
Yeah.
The illustrations remind me a little bit of the original illustrations in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah.
That kind,
yeah,
of black and white, drippy, yes, weird,
mm-hmm,
books. And like that, those stories are stories that you can read aloud to each other. But also, if you talk to anybody who grew, mm-hmm, up in like the, mm-hmm, 90s, they'll be like, oh my God, there was this one picture in this book,
yeah,
that, you know, absolutely traumatized me. And so, right, I do think there's that element with horror,
yeah,
and even obviously for very different age groups, but
yeah,
that having something visual can help,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Sticking.
And I want to, kind of bouncing off of that, I want to jump to graphic novels, because that is another format of book that just is so rewarding physically. I have seen, there are graphic novels that they do audio versions of, but you just, for me, the graphic novel is like, you lose so much if,
yeah,
you do an audio. I mean, it's like, it can be cool. It can be like a radio drama, like, mm-hmm, Bubble, but whereas, you know, Bubble came first, audio first, then graphic novel. Same with, like, the Adventure Zone comic books.
Well, I think those are very interesting in that, like,
yeah,
because both give you such different
things. They're so different.
And, like, the way, yeah.
Yeah, so with the Adventure Zone, it's really fun. So, the Adventure Zone is a podcast that the McElroy brothers do with their dad, Clint, who was on the podcast. Go back and listen to that.
Love Clint.
He's great. And they play D&D. They play D&D with their dad in the first...
Dungeons and Dragons.
Sorry, yes. I'm so deep into it, I forget that it's actually short for something. They play Dungeons and Dragons with their dad, and when it first starts, they're all brand new to it. I think maybe Travis played a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons in college, but they're all super green. And Griffin is the DM, he's the dungeon master, and so he sort of sets everything up and has them go on these adventures, and he presents them with choices, and their characters make choices, et cetera, et cetera. In the graphic novel adaptations, you have their characters going on these adventures, and you have a graphic novel version of Griffin up in the corner of the graphic novel just, like, yelling things to them. It's very meta. It's very cute. It's hilarious. And it's a fun, you know, you get to see how the artist, I think it's Carrie Peach, interpreted their characters, and that's really fun. But so that's an example where, you know, you can listen to an audio, obviously it's not an audiobook, it's a podcast. You can listen to an audio version, but I would say most graphic novels either don't have an audio version at all, or if they do, it's just not the same, because you're missing so much. You're missing the art, you're missing so much of the context.
Since there are no description, of like we were talking about with dialogue. Lincoln and the Bardo, it's just dialogue, but with a graphic novel, it's not meant to be just dialogue. Right. It's meant to have a lot of context that you don't get.
Yeah. So that's a format that, and I think, and, you know, I talked about this with Clint McElroy, but I think graphic novels for a really long time got a bad rap because, you know, people thought they weren't literary enough, right? Mm-hmm. And parents would sort of snub. They would sort of, like, turn their noses up at them when their kids wanted to read them because they'd be like, ugh, it's just a great, you know, read a real book, right? And I just, you know, I just have to, like, get on my little pedestal for a minute because there are graphic novels that I have read that are better than traditional literary novels.
Oh my god.
The stories are better. The writing is better. And, you know, I just think that, I think part of what I think happened was I think people didn't realize that there was a difference between comic books and graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference. Comic books are, you know, the sort of weekly strips that come out. Graphic novels are, it's a novel in graphic form. It's a novel with art. And I just, you know, and I say this to customers all the time with love, that graphic novels play a huge, important role in literature. And one of the things that I love about graphic novels, in particular with reluctant readers mm-hmm. of any age, reluctant readers of any age, often with kids, but I see this, I've had this conversation with adults too, in that, you know, we learn to read with picture books,
yeah.
right? We learn to read getting context from the pictures on the page. It helps us understand the words. It helps us figure out what the words are because we're looking at the page and we're like, those words probably describe what's happening here, right? It's how we learn to read. To expect kids or reluctant readers to go from that to books without pictures is, that's a big jump. It's hard. It's not exciting, usually. And so when I see kids come in and they want a graphic novel and the parent starts to balk at it,
mm-hmm.
I always jump in because it's a bridge. It's a stepping stone. And you know what? There are amazing graphic novels with amazing stories, and it might just be the thing that gets them into reading more and reading books without pictures, maybe, or, you know.
Or they'll stay at graphic novels and that's fine because they're books and you just can enjoy things that you're reading and it doesn't have to be, like, there isn't some moral.
Yes. Books are books are books are books are books. Just read. Read whatever.
You both have read Station 11, right?
Yes.
Okay. Station 11 is about, okay,
I know.
Then you're going to want to.
I know, because
it's two things. It's about how a graphic novel and how Shakespeare save the world.
Yep.
And if any book can speak to why a graphic novel might be important, That is the book, and that's a fine piece of literature. Absolutely. Right there. Absolutely. And people bring this up.
Yes.
They say, this is stupid. Why are you reading that comic book? Mm-hmm. And that comic book becomes a lifesaver.
Yeah.
And also a kind of a life destroyer. Yeah. I don't want to give too much away, but
spoilers, but
The book and the graphic novel is called Station 11, and that the whole book is named after Station 11.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
So are big fans of graphic novels here.
And I think it is important to talk about them as not just stepping stones, but I also as a stepping stone, like I've had like 11-year-olds come up to me with a graphic novel adaptation of Macbeth. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that your 11-year-old would be reading Macbeth if it were in a graphic novel? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I know some 11-year-olds who would have, but generally,
and
it can be this kind of entry point. And I know a lot of parents who have reluctant readers when they're like in high school and they have The Great Gatsby assigned or they have Slaughterhouse 5. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of these classic books that are now adapted into graphic novels.
Yeah.
And parents will get them as a companion piece for their kids because they can get the same plot and understanding it and getting the message of Animal Farm is valuable whether it is all... if you're reading exactly what George Orwell wrote all the way through, or if you're understanding it through pictures as well. It's
absolutely.
And there's some that are, they're not designed for kids.
Oh, like Mouse. That was the first one I ever read. I think I was in college and we were assigned Mouse, and I'll never forget because when I ordered it, I ordered a used copy because I was a broke college student. And the woman who sent it to me sent me both volumes, even though I only needed the first one, because she was like, oh, my son read this in high school and he really loved it and I wanted you to have the full set. So she sent me, so I have the full set of Mouse. But, that's about the Holocaust from their perspective of these mice.
The Nazis are cats.
And the mice are the Jews.
And it's not funny. It's not.
It's heartbreaking.
It is.
Amazing. It's heartbreaking.
And what's the name of the author of that?
Art Spiegelman,
yes. Yeah.
So yeah, we could talk about this forever.
Maybe we should do
We'll probably do a specific episode just for that. I'll move on. But I just, graphic novels are, come browse them. We all have big opinions on them. Some other ones that I just love the formats of. The first one that jumps to mind when this topic first started floating to the tops of our brains of, unique physical books. The first one that jumped to my brain was S. by J.J. Abrams and Doug Durst. This book, if you've never seen this book, oh boy! Okay, I don't even know. It's like a book within a book, and there's things written in the margins in two different color pens because it's about people, it's about like a, these two different people who keep passing this book back and forth to each other, reading it, writing things in the margins, writing notes to each other, highlighting things. It's like, I think they keep leaving it in a cafe or something. There are, the book that they are reading, which is different than the book that you, the reader, are reading, is this whole other thing that they are, I think, trying to... there's like a history aspect to it. I don't remember all the details because it came out years ago. But when you get this hardcover book, when you open it, you have to be careful not to just let it flop open because there are things tucked inside. Oh. There are postcards. There are loose pages. There are things that like you are discovering the way that the two characters are discovering and leaving for each other in the pages. It's really cool. It's a gorgeous book. Yeah, it comes in like a sleeve thing so that you don't lose anything.
Is it still available? I mean, I feel like...
I know that we don't currently have it on the shelf. I think you can still get it. But it's one of those ones that, like, they couldn't put it into paperback.
It's not a library.
It's not a, you can't have it book. In the library. Yeah. You can't have an audiobook version. It has to be this specific format. So it may be harder to get now, but if you can get your hands on it, it's really cool. Along those same lines, this book, House of Leaves. Mm-hmm. Oh, House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski. We used to have a coworker, Brian, who loved this author. I'm sure he still does. I don't know.
He moved to Vermont.
He moved away, and
he's dead to us.
We don't care about him anymore.
Yeah, that's no, just we kidding. Love you, Brian, if you're listening.
Brian, if you're listening, we miss you. Come visit. Okay, so House of Leaves is a horror novel. And you guys know I have high standards with what scares me.
Mm.
I have been reading House of Leaves since before Brian left, so like 6 years. I haven't finished it yet because it is so dense that I have to keep putting it down. So it's big. It's a physically big book. And it's a full color book. And there are notes in the... I love this. So when you open up to like the copyright page, you'll notice that like the word house, every time you see the word house, it's in blue ink. Mm. There are things that are struck out. There are things that are in red ink. And there's a little note at the bottom, a note on this edition. And it tells you there are all these different editions of this book. Now, this is part of the fiction. So there's an incomplete version, which says no color, no braille, elements in the exhibits, appendices, and index may be missing. Then there's a black and white edition. Color is not used for the word house, minotaur, or struck passages. There's no braille. There's no black and white plates. Oh, no, it has black and white plates. Then there's a two-color edition. Either house appears in blue or struck passages, and the word minotaur appear in red. No braille, color, or black and white plates. And then there's the full color edition, and this is highlighted with a square around it, so you know this is the edition you have. The word house in blue, minotaur, which is in red, and all struck passages in red. The only struck line in chapter 21 appears in purple. And then it just says XXXXXXX and color plates. So right off the bat, you're like, there's something weird going on in this book. What is happening? It sets up the idea that this book that you, the reader, are reading is this late edition of something else. The first line is, this is not for you. It starts with these pages that look like they were typed on a typewriter. Anytime you see the word house, it's in blue. The pages are out of order. There's, I think, one of them is upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to find annotations. And it just, and so then, and so like the typewritten pages are, okay, this guy has discovered this other book, and these are his notes about this other book. And then you start to read the next thing, which is the book that he has found, which is a record of this scary story thing that happened, which is based on journals. Like, it is like a book within a book within a book. The story at the core is terrifying. It's about this house that it's like growing, it's changing, it's moving, but in like really subtle, creepy ways. So like one of the moments like that actually like made me shut this book and put it down, which does not happen, is this couple has just bought this house. They're doing construction on it. They're like moving in, right? And they're, I think the husband, like, has a video camera. He's, like, filming things. And you're getting these, like, transcripts from this video that this other guy has found and has written in his journals. So you're reading a transcript of a video, I think. And they're, like, doing all this work on the house. And the wife is putting books on this bookshelf that she has, she's so proud. She has like measured and cut this little bookshelf for this little nook in her room. I think it's like in her closet. She's measured it so perfectly. It fits. It's totally flush with the walls. She's just so proud of herself. She's like, I did this myself and I'm installing it and now I get to put books on it, right? She goes on and on about how perfectly this shelf fits. She's so excited. She's like putting books on. She like gets distracted by, I think her husband is like confused about measurements, right? Because he's outside and he's looking at the blueprints and he's like talking to these construction guys and they're like, the measurements of the outside, like we're short, we're like missing material. It's like not right. And he's like, well, the blueprint says this. And they're like, I understand that. And the inside should be this and the outside should be this other measurement. And it's just not lining up. It's just not right. And so she's like hearing this and she's like talking to them about that. And then she goes back and one of the books falls off the shelf because the shelf is too short. And when I tell you, and like she screams. And I shut the book and I was like, I'm done. Oh my God. The house is changing. What is going on? This book is so dense. I mean, this book will consume you. And I mean, you flip through it and it's just annotations. There are pages where things are sideways, things are backwards. It looks like they've been pasted in, cut up, shuffled. It's upside down. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it's terrifying and it's brilliant.
I want to read this book. I've
literally been chipping away at this for years because it's not something that I can sit down and just read cover to cover. Like I read like a tiny bit at a time and then I go and read other stuff and blow through it. But like this book has never left my brain. Usually when I'm doing something like that and I'm reading something and it takes me forever, I go like a really long time between reading it and I just kind of forget that I've been reading it. This one has never left my brain. Like, it is always in the back of my mind.
It's one of those books, I feel like, you walk into any bookstore and, like, mention it to a couple people at the register, and there is going to be a strong reaction, either mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, I've never read that, but mm-hmm. I've heard about it, or somebody being like, yeah, I'm getting through it. Like, it mm-hmm. is, I feel like every time I've encountered it amongst book people, there's like a very strong response.
Yeah.
I challenge you, Joe.
Yeah.
What?
We should
to read it?
We'll both, let's read it.
We should all read it and then book club about it.
Okay.
Okay. And then special episode.
I challenge you to finish
special.
It.
I will finish it. We'll all read it and we'll do a special episode. Book club of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this
book
is on the
book. Oh, could do Halloween book club.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in October.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Now
we have to. Okay. You heard it here first, listeners. We are challenging ourselves. So that, I mean, like, that is the quintessential, like, you can't have an audiobook of this. Like, you just can't. It would be so confusing. It's confusing to have the physical copy, but you get so much from seeing it. I mean, why is house in blue? Why is Minotaur in red? Why are they talking about a Minotaur at all? Why are there things that are crossed out? Why are there pages being shuffled? What is going on? It's amazing. I highly, highly, highly recommend. Along the same lines as that, I only have a couple more. Along the same lines of that is Horror Store by Grady Hendrix. This much less so, because you can absolutely listen to the audiobook of this. This one's just fun if you have the physical copy because it looks like an instruction manual for an IKEA furniture thing. And each chapter is named after it, so it's an off-brand IKEA. IKEA exists in this universe, but this is sort of an American IKEA competitor. And it's a horror story that happens within this this place. And I want to get
horror
the
store with an umlaut over
yes.
the O.
And the store is called Orsk. and so it's this terrifying story that happens in one night in this Orsk. Each chapter, there's an important piece of furniture that plays a role in that chapter, and the chapter is named after that particular item of furniture. And the chapter headings, let me find one, are a little description, a little picture, like an IKEA-styled picture of the piece of furniture, and then a little description from, like, the Orsk manual or whatever. But what's funny is that the items of furniture get weirder and weirder and weirder as you go. Oh. And, like, there's a few torture devices in there that play a role that obviously are not actually sold at Orsk. It's just fun. It's the text is all in blue.
That was also one of Brian's staff picks.
Yes. Yes. He loved this one. And this is, I talked to Grady Hendrix about this. He's adapting it right now into a movie. He's writing the screenplay.
Oh, cool.
Which is going to be so cool visually. And he was lamenting the fact that one of the main climactic things that happens in the book happens in someone's head. And so he's like, he's like, this stupid author. And I was like, but yeah, so that's another one where it's like, you can, you know, have other editions of this and it's fine, but you get so much extra when you have the physical copy. It's just like extra fun. And then the last thing, which I think, Hillary also has a sort of similar thing to talk about, is, books in other genres. So, books like art books or musical books. So, like, the Hamilton. We've talked about the Hamilton. Yeah. I've listened to the audiobook of Hamilton the Revolution. It's the history of the show. But the audiobook doesn't give you the gorgeous photographs, right? Like, you know, this book is beautiful. And also, it looks like an old-timey, you know, leather-bound book, right? It looks like it's straight out of Hamilton's library. You know, so the audiobook of that one, like, I adore, because I adore every single person on the audiobook. You know, Lynn does the annotations at the very end. And I think it comes with, like, a PDF download of the photographs, but it's just not the same as having the physical edition and being able to flip to your favorite parts. Similarly, there are these science books that I love that can kind of be read in any order. They are not cover-to-cover books, right? Because they're nonfiction and they're not biographies. They're just, like, interesting fun facts or whatever. So, like, an example is the What If by Randall Munroe, who created the XKCD comics, which if you Google it, you've probably seen them. They're those stick figures with funny captions. And, like, this one is just serious scientific answers to absurd hypothetical questions. So you just open it up to a random page. What would happen if a hairdryer with continuous power were turned on and put in an airtight 1x1x1 meter box? And then he does the real science and math and tells you what would happen. So that's one that you just kind of, like, open up randomly. And there's a fun payoff. And the other one is actually also by Ryan North, who wrote To Be or Not To Be. And this is How to Invent Everything, A Survival Guide for the Stranded Time Traveler.
I love that book.
It's amazing. I gave this to my brother-in-law for Christmas. And this is another one that you can, I mean, you could, in theory, read it cover to cover, but it's way funnier if you just go to the, like, table of contents and you're like, oh, okay, I need to learn how to make, I don't know, I need to learn how to invent a hot air balloon. And so then you find what page hot air balloons are on and you skip to that page and it's like, why do you need a hot air balloon? All right, well, here's how it was first invented and here's what you would need for it and here's how you would invent that. So it's written as if you are a time traveler stuck in time and you need to invent certain things to get back home or to survive. It is funny and it is totally like, you can just pick a random page, pick a random chapter. I just opened up to chapter 10, which is common human complaints. And so it's just all these things that humans are like, I can't see, that's too far away. All right, here's how to invent a telescope or glasses or whatever. Yeah, it's really, really fun. There's cool illustrations. There's, like, flowcharts and things. So again, like, really pays off to have it in person, and it's also not something that someone would maybe just, like, you wouldn't see it necessarily on a bestseller list. You wouldn't necessarily see it on like recommendations lists. But if you're browsing the bookstore and you see How to Invent Everything, excuse me, yes, I would like to read that. What is that, please?
Yeah, it's a great book for, like, a teenager who kind of like science, but doesn't necessarily like science, and, yeah. but maybe they like science fiction, and it sort of poses you as a time traveler, and how do you get out of here? Oh, well, I'll invent dynamite,
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, like, Ryan North's ability to take these kind of more...
Yeah.
Classical or, like, boring topics. I'm not saying Shakespeare's boring.
Academic
subjects and have this way into them that is funny and engaging.
And accessible.
Yeah.
And fun, yeah. But, yeah, like, I know, Hillary, you had a similar sort of, like, nonfiction.
Yeah, I mean, I have, like, two approaches to this. One is I love these kind of aphoristic books, you know, where you pick them up and you can open to any page and there's some fun, interesting fact on them. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily a book that you need, but they're really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And they're great for gifts.
I was just going to say, they make awesome gifts.
You're not going to offend anybody by giving them this book. They're going to have fun reading it. They're also kind of a great book to maybe have at, like, a vacation house where people are coming and going and can't really focus so much. I have these two that I picked up. This one is pretty new, Mental Floss. If you know this, it's a website. They have this new book called The Curious Reader, A Literary Miscellany of Novels and Novelists, edited by Aaron McCarthy and the team at Mental Floss. This book is, if you're a reader, is just terrific. You can open up to any page and you're going to find, I just opened up to this page, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, 100 Years of Solitude, beautiful illustrations, discussion of... what was happening at the time he wrote it. Here's one, Fascinating Facts About Kazuo Ishiguro. He was obsessed with Sherlock Holmes.
Cool, yeah, that checks out.
But there was some hilarious one I was reading to you this morning about people who had their books rejected.
Oh, gosh.
And one was like... does this book really have to be all about a whale?
This book like would be better without this Gatsby character. Yes, right. That was the one you read to me.
Gatsby character, that would be awesome. God. But it features all kinds of literary writers. It's a nice hardcover with beautiful illustrations in it. Just like great facts. Oh, here's one. Patricia Highsmith once said, "My imagination functions better when I don't have to speak with people."
Same, girl, same.
Oh, Charles Dickens had a soft spot for a few felines in his life. In 1862, he was so upset after the death of his favorite cat, Bob, that he had the kitty's paw stuffed and mounted to an ivory letter opener.
Oh, dear God.
Ooh, I don't that know if I want to try that.
That took such a turn.
So...
oh my God.
I really like this book. Nobody needs this book, but it's a super fun book.
Yeah.
Mental Floss, The Curious Reader. And then here's this other one that I just adore, this book. It's been out for a little while now. The Madman's Library, The Strangest Books, Manuscripts, and Other Literary Curiosities from History by Edward Brooke Hitching.
Amazing.
This book is full of stuff like... oh, here are the books that are covered with human skin.
Yes.
Oh, here's the tiniest book ever written. Here are, here's the book that was a Bible found in the stomach of a cod when it was cut open.
Oh,
yeah,
crazy.
Really, yeah. It also is beautifully illustrated. It has amazing, odd stories. Just really, really hard to put down. The kind of book that, like, you could lose it on your library shelf and then some rainy day rediscover it and be just like, oh, that book, yes! I'm going to read this book.
And I will say that we have, if you've ever been in our store, we have those front tables. The table that is physically closest to the main register usually has these types of books on it.
Yes.
It's like fun, quirky, nonfiction. They're usually like that type of, you open it up to a random page and there's something fun on there. Yeah. So if you're into that type of book, or if you're looking for that type of gift, check that table, because I often find myself standing at that table just chuckling to myself looking through some of the stuff that's on there.
So the second kind of book, besides a sort of entertaining miscellany, are the books that teach you how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is really worthwhile if you come into this store and you're a person who usually just lurks around fiction or, you know, poetry or whatever. Make your way to the other side of the store, over towards kids, where we have things like the nature section, the sports section, the craft section, the cookbook section. I guarantee you, you can tumble into just amazing books. And some of my favorites are, we have a lot of books that have to do with woodworking,
mm-hmm.
firewood, mm-hmm. and axes.
Yes.
I have a family that owns a woodlot, and there's a lot of wood chopping that goes on. So I am constantly giving books like this to Amazing. People in my family.
I just have to say, there was a point earlier when I came behind the register and there were just axe books everywhere. And I turned to Hillary's daughter, who also works at the store, and is like, what? She's like, I don't know. My mother just came over with a bunch of axe books. I don't know if we should be concerned.
Axe wielding like, Hillary.
So
I'm going to mention a couple. One that I've given to several people is this book, Norwegian Wood: Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way by Lars Mitting. And yes, it is exactly what it says it is. It is all about putting aside a wood supply and how to stack it beautifully. And there are these amazing photographs of Norwegians and their wood piles. I know it sounds ridiculous, but like, if you are a person who has a wood stove or know somebody, this is a
it's valuable information. especially in New England.
There's another one called Buchanan Smith's Axe Handbook: Knowing, Buying, Using, Hanging, Restoring, Adorning. Mm-hmm. It's all about axes. It gives you every bit of information you would ever need to know about axes. I never knew there were so... Oh, here's a page of double bit axes. The Puget Sound, Peeling, Michigan, Swamping, Maine Wedge, Western. Oh, single bit. You know, it just, it's amazing.
So
it shows you, here's a chapter on the dynamics of the strike.
Yes!
And one of the most, and they show you how to sharpen them.
Oh.
They show you, how to chop wood and how to maintain them. There's also this book, American Axe, which is just beautiful. The Tool That Shaped a Continent by Brett McLeod. This one is a lot about the history of axes and the business of making axes, which was a really big deal in early America. And it has all kinds of stuff about collecting axes, where if you live in New Hampshire and we have these amazing thrift stores, like, this is a thing people actually can do here. You can go into a thrift store and find an old axe, and this book will tell you how to fix it up and make it nice, and will tell you where it came from, and, you know, all about the maker of it. It's beautifully illustrated.
Cool.
And it also has a nice section, chapter 6, Playing with Sharp Objects, which is all about axe throwing.
Yeah.
And there's a
That's
lot of
thing
that's
now.
A thing now. You can go and throw axes.
Yeah.
So, and it's supposed to be super fun. I haven't done this, but...
We should all go. Field trip.
Yeah, I think field trip.
Yes, after our book club, we're all going to go throw some axes, and hopefully at least 2 out of 3 of us survive it.
I'm into this.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you about one last book. There's many more below my feet, but I'm not going to tell you about
so
all
many
of them.
More
Ryan is shaking
books.
Her head.
I mean,
no,
but like...
But this one is beautiful. It's called Woodland Craft by Ben Law. This is all about building things, hand making things with stuff out of your woods, but how to make like woven panels for your garden, how to make a diamond trellis for your garden, how to make chairs out of, how to make a yurt.
Oh, I stayed in a yurt once when I was I worked at a summer camp. I can make my own.
You can make your own.
Well, do you,
remember? Have woods.
I do. I have epic woods.
We're going to find you an axe in one of the antique stores and
yes,
then
build
you.
Yes, please. And I will do that. Well, do you remember, Hillary, it was like, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, all of a sudden, all of these treehouse books came out.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
It was like all of a sudden everyone was like, I want to build a treehouse. And not only that, so we got all these like how to build a treehouse, but then we also got these just beautiful, like almost art books that were just photographs of really cool treehouses.
We were looking at a few different like interior design books earlier today, and oh my God, they're just
they're
so
beautiful.
Pretty.
I love looking at my so. Along these same lines, my favorite books to look at are over in the shelter section.
I love
shelter. That was what we were talking about.
I said shelter books are better than Prozac.
Oh.
Like, if you're
depressed.
They
are so satisfying. Like, I will open up. Oh, my God. I wish I could remember what book it was. There was some book I was looking at recently. And, like, you literally, like, you opened it up and it was just, everything was beautifully organized. It was all arranged by color.
That was the one I was looking at. I have to go grab it because
it was so satisfying. And I think this started, like, I think my first foray into these books was Marie Kondo. Because Hans Blomqvist, In the Mood for Color.
This book is so beautiful.
Perfect palettes for creative interiors. Yeah, it's like, if you love aesthetic, you need this book. Like,
or you can just come in and look at it, just, and then it's and on your lunch hour, and you will go away refreshed.
Oh my gosh, there's a page just of cool mirrors. Like, I just, ugh. And like, how to, and like, and what's nice about these is that it actually, like, teaches you how to, like, have this kind of aesthetic in your house. Like,
and
I
it's
just
very thrift store kind of book.
Yeah, this one is like, it's set up in a rainbow. So like, I just opened up to the blue section. Now I'm in the green section. Oh, there's the orange section. Super beautiful. And like, you'll also have these books that are about organizing. And so you'll open up to these pages where it's like, it looks like this person has just bought out the container store, and like, they just, everything is like perfectly, everything fits in these little containers, and it's just a beautiful, like, bright rainbow, and like, it's gorgeous. Or like, you'll have, you know, like a Marie Kondo book where it's just like, wow, that looks just so simple and nice, and it's like a breath of fresh air to look through these photographs, because of course they're like gorgeous photographs of these beautifully perfectly clean houses with these amazing aesthetics. And I just, oh, they
the garden
just make me
books
so happy.
Are like that too.
The garden, yes.
You know, go look at the garden books if you
like
want to.
It's some like tours of New England gardens.
Yes. If you were totally in love with The Secret Garden as a kid, you need to hang out in our gardening section now as an adult.
And it's right next to our shelter section, so you
it's
can just
all
like, hit it all at once.
And I actually brought one more book over that was, I got Joe to buy this for their friend.
Oh my gosh, and she loves
it. It's called The Seed Garden, The Art and Practice of Seed Saving. It is a beautiful book that teaches you all about saving seeds. So it's another, you know, learn as you go book. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect time of year for seed saving because things are coming ripe.
Yes.
And if you're interested, so while you're in the garden section, check out that book.
Yeah. Also, Hillary is also an amazing gardener, and I'm constantly like, hey, Hillary, can you come to my house and just like figure out where the sun hits and like tell me what to plant, and also maybe could you plant it for me? and maybe like stop by weekly and just like make sure everything's doing okay.
Yeah, that's when I needed a gardening book for my friend. I'm like, Hillary.
Yep.
Hillary. She
tells me all about the mushrooms in my yard. She's like, oh, this one would be good for eating. Ooh, that one's poisonous. Don't eat that one.
And we're all like, I'm just not going to eat any of
them. I'm just not
going to
touch
them. I'll probably die.
I'll turn them into fairy houses. It'll be fine. This was so much fun to like take that turn from sort of like novels into nonfiction, because we don't just read fiction. We don't just read memoirs or stories. Like, there are other books, and they are valuable, and they are
satisfying and delightful, and you can't really, you know, you can't get an audiobook of a, you know, Hans Blomqvist in the Mood for Color.
Yeah, like, no, that's
not
work.
It's not gonna work. You need the photographs. You need the art books, and you need that.
We didn't even get into cooking.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, yeah.
Cookbooks. Well, we need to do a show about cookbooks.
Yeah, that's a whole. Ooh, that would be like if we ever do a live show, we should like talk about cookbooks and like
and
bring
food.
Snack, yeah.
Except. You're going to set us up to bring food next to Hillary. Like, I'm going to be like, here, look at this.
I made. And Hillary's like, I was a professional chef in New York City. Thank you very much. Here's my spread. And also, here are flowers that came from my garden. And here's a, oops, I built a yurt in the middle of the store.
That's not happening.
No. Yeah, no. So all that to say is that there are so many different types of books, and no matter what type of reader you are, there's something for you.
Our podcast table is going to be awesome.
People are going to be so confused, and I'm here for it. I'm excited. Okay, let's start wrapping up, because we could be here for hours.
I didn't even get into the knot-tying books that I brought.
Yeah,
so we'll just skip over those.
There's so... much. There's so much we could talk about forever. Games, puzzles, I can't. Okay. We've got a ton of events happening. We are mostly in person now. We still have the occasional virtual event. But we are mostly in person at the moment. Of course, we are keeping an eye on the Delta variant, because of course. But for now, in September, we've got a bunch. We've got, we do have a virtual event with Tom Wessels. Speaking of these really cool nonfiction.
The best books.
What did he write? The Forced Landscape, right?
The book about, is that what it's called?
It's like Reading the Forested Landscape.
Reading the Forested Landscape is an amazing book. And he also...
So he's got a new one. And this event is Take a Hike, New England's Roadside Ecology with Tom Wessels. So that's going to be a virtual event. Highly recommend that. It's going to be really cool just talking about the cool ecology of New Hampshire. And he kind of, it's almost like a road trip style book, I think. And then for some in-person events, we have The Children's Secret with Nina Monroe, which is nom de plume for our lovely Virginia McGregor, who has been on the podcast before. We adore her. She writes her books in the cafe sometimes. She is a regular customer. So she's doing a launch event for her new book, The Children's Secret. That is on the 7th, September 7th. And then the next Monday, the 13th, our book club is back in session. We had our Pickapalooza. It went super well. It was probably the easiest way that we've ever selected book club books. It went super fast. And our first one is the Thursday Murder Club. So we are
by Richard Osman.
So we are discussing that on September 13th at 5:30. And then there's a bunch more. We've got Margaret Porter coming back on the next day, the 14th. She'll be here at 6 p.m. discussing The Limits of Limelight and so much more. So that's all on our website. If you click on the events calendar, you'll see all of that. Or you can go to gibsonsbookstore.com/event. Pull up the most current events calendar. Lots and lots and lots of fun stuff. Even though this episode was mostly about how you have to have these particular books in physical format, we are still sponsored by Libro FM, and we love them.
We
love them so much. If you are new to Libro FM, if you haven't taken the leap yet, if you haven't switched from Audible, or you just haven't tried audiobooks yet, go ahead and go to libro.fm/Gibson's Bookstore. And when you are at checkout, use the code LAYDOWN and you will get 2 extra credits for free. So that's 3 credits for, I believe it's $14.99. You cannot beat that deal. It is great. We adore them. They're so good to us.
And the deal, like when you're a member and you
buy books, like, it's such a good deal.
It's such a good deal. Yeah.
Like, I just got an audiobook for $12 the other day, right. And I was like,
yeah,
that is not an audiobook price.
No, usually audiobooks are around the same price as a hardcover, if not more, because sometimes they take way more to produce. So if you are a member, you do get a discounted price, which is huge. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye! Bye.